Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 25th of March, 2019. I'm your host, The Real Gerald Quinn, discussing the world of sports and pop culture. As always, we are streaming live here on my YouTube channel. Certainly, you can check us out there. You can check us out live or even after the broadcast is completed, 15, 20 minutes after the broadcast is completed. Also, we certainly will be putting this on Blog Talk Radio as well, so you can check us out there. Also, you know, Stitcher, iTunes, .apple.com. We are all over the place, so check the podcast out. I am happy to present our very first sponsor of the podcast. It's definitely exciting. All calculated measures. Clothing, as you can see here, had a shirt here. Shout out to my man Adrian McDonald providing the shirt. Confidence, discipline, consistency, those are the traits of all calculated measures clothing line. Imagine if you did one of those things, forget about three of those things, if you applied one of those traits to your life, how much better would your life would be? Confidence, discipline, consistency. Shout out to Adrian McDonald for providing the shirt, all calculated measures. Certainly, we look forward to having him on the program to discuss his ventures in terms of the clothing business. We're going to begin, though, with the NCAA tournament, really a chalk, not too many upsets to say the least. You had the top 12 seeds advancing for the first time since 2009. Not a lot of upsets. So what happens is you don't get a lot of upsets in the first two rounds. It sets up for a spectacular Sweet 16. And, of course, the story of the tournament so far, the game of the tournament has to be Duke, what transpired between Duke and UCF yesterday evening, as Duke almost went out to a UCF team that was – really deserved to win the game. I mean, UCF had that game dead to rights, up forward with the ball. Now, a lot of people are knocking the play. You know, take time off the clock. I had no problem with the play in terms of going for the lob. You gotta catch the ball. I mean, Dawkins had been spectacular over the course of the game, with the 32 points, made every big shot known to man. He just couldn't catch the ball clean. Would have been an easy dunk. It was a perfect pass off the alley-oop that would have put them up six with about, let's say, a minute and 50 seconds left. So I had no problem with them being aggressive, going for a six-point lead. More than likely, they're up six. Duke was struggling to score at that point. More than likely, the game probably would have been over. With that being said, he misses the alley-oop. Duke comes back, hits a three, and from there on, it was anybody's basketball game. UCF had numerous opportunities to win this game. And like I said, they should have won this game. Box out, missed box out on the free throw. We talked about the alley-oop. You just talked about a number of plays that could have went their way that did not go their way. And, you know, this is one of those things that sometimes it's just not, it's just not your turn. And they had every opportunity to win this game. And again, Duke is fortunate, to say the least, to have won this game. Yeah, I mean, Duke, this game was UCF's all the way. UCF's defense was tremendous over the course of the game. For the most part, the game plan was tremendous as far as what they were forcing Duke to take outside shots, basically daring Duke to take outside shots, guarding Taco Fall, guarding Trey Jones, who seemingly was scared to death to shoot any outside shot. He was 1 for 8. Again, Duke gets saved for the second time in three games by one Zion Williamson, who again was spectacular despite the missed free throw and some late foul trouble. Was just, you know, was he saved them. I mean, he single-handedly saved them. Reddish had a decent game, but again, typical Cam Reddish floats in and out of games. This was Zion Williamson. I mean, he had 32 of their 77 points. He made every big play. The near three-point play, made some big threes, Taco Fall out of the game, which really changed the complexion of the game. When Fall goes out, who had a nice game, offensively and defensively, but when Fall goes out, you know, they more than likely they would not have gotten that offensive rebound had Fall been in the game. So again, Duke, you know, it's about surviving and advancing. You win by, you know, it's not how you win. Certainly not by the margin of victory you win. You just want to just get through this first weekend. We've seen a number of number one teams trip up in the Sweet 16, in the second round over the course of NCAA tournament history. And certainly Duke is fortunate, to say the least, to be in the Sweet 16. I thought UCF fought valiantly over the course of that game. They were down a couple of times where it looked like Duke was about to apply a knockout blow, especially at the end of the second half, going to the end of the first half, going to the second half. Duke gets up by 8. UCF comes out, closes the gap. Then Duke pushes the lead again to about 6 or 7. UCF kept battling. Just kept battling and just refused to give up, refused to quit. They played a tremendous game. Frankly, really, really deserved to win the game. I mean, there's no two ways about it. They really deserved to win that game, but just came up short. A couple of plays here, a couple of plays there. I don't want to hear about the officiating down the stretch. And again, this is coming from somebody who hates Duke with a passion. Zion Williamson offensive foul that could have been called offensive foul is a, you know, those offensive fouls can go either way. I thought it was somewhat of a flop before he got to Taco Fall, before he fouled out Taco Fall. The free throw where it was apparently a hook and hold on R.J. Barrett, I heard some people complain about R.J. Barrett pushing the defender to get the offensive rebound. I didn't see it in real time. Again, we can go back and do these plays replaying the game or watching them on our DVR, slow motion, all we want. But in real time, these are plays that I just didn't recognize. These are plays that I just didn't see for the most part. Even the Zion so-called offensive foul was a judgment call. We know offensive fouls are judgment calls. A lot of times it wasn't to me a clear and decisive offensive foul. Again, I was rooting for UCF. I mean, I had Duke in my bracket going a long way, but again, you're talking about somebody who roots for North Carolina, so there's no love for Duke whatsoever. So, it was a great game. It was a classic ending. The officials in that spot officials don't want to have any decisions in a game like that. They don't want to have to. They don't want us to be talking about what calls that they made to cost the team a game. Officials, for the most part, let the teams play. They could have fouled. Taco Fall could have fouled out a couple minutes earlier. He clearly fouled Williamson. Fouled Williamson a couple times where he could have picked up fouls. So I didn't have any problem with the officiating whatsoever. UCF had numerous opportunities to win this basketball game. Again, up 4. This is the possession that Johnny Dawkins is going to be seeing in his sleep for the better part of the offseason. Up 4 with the ball, alley-oop, a clean catch. A clean catch and a dunk. You're up by 6 with about a minute and 50 left. That is a possession that Dawkins will be thinking about forever, because to me, Duke was absolutely on the ropes. Duke was ready to get knocked out. At that point, they were struggling making shots. Outside Zion Williamson, nobody was really generating offense at that point in the game. Even Barrett wasn't generating offense. up until the putback that he had to put Duke ahead for the final 77-76. So again, I don't want to hear about the officials. The officials to me had no bearing on this game whatsoever. Williamson was in foul trouble. Fall was going to be in foul trouble over the court. You knew he was going to foul out of this game. There was just no two ways about it. I thought for the most part, he played well. His presence was felt, and give UCF a lot of credit. They did what they had to do. They did everything but win the game, and they really fought hard. Dawkins was arguably, outside of Williamson, the best player on the floor. He was definitely the number one shot maker as far as some of the shots that he was hitting. Every big shot, he hit a big three at six. Duke, it looked like Duke was about to run away midway through the second half at 66. They were up 66-59. He hits a three. Cut it to four. That was a big shot and really turned the game in the favor of UCF at that point. So he made every big play, every big shot, except the putback layup, which somehow did not go in. I thought the shot by the guard, the point guard, was going to go in. Allen off the glass. That looked like that was going to go into me, and I definitely thought that the putback by Aubrey Dawkins was certainly going to go in as well. So with all that being said, Duke advances to the Sweet 16. You have five ACC teams going to the Sweet 16. You have four SEC teams. So you have nine out of the 16 teams are from two conferences. Again, this is a stacked Sweet 16, to say the least. You have some great matchups, some great 2 and 3, 2 versus 3 matchups, some great 1 versus 4 matchups, and it should set up for a tremendous weekend, tremendous Thursday through Sunday of basketball. The lowest seed remaining is Oregon, which is a dangerous team. I had Oregon going far. In one of my brackets, so Oregon is certainly a dangerous team, somebody that could be reckoned with. And listen, not a lot of upsets. We had a couple near upsets with Tennessee. The Tennessee-Iowa game was wild. That game looked like it was about to be a 30 or 40-point blowout. Give Iowa a lot of credit coming back from 25 to force overtime. Tennessee fell asleep at the wheel. The rest of the games were ho-hum. I was surprised by the Buffalo Texas Tech result. I picked Buffalo to beat Tech. I picked Buffalo to get to the Sweet 16, but certainly wouldn't have been surprised that Texas Tech took them out. But this is how easily Texas Tech took Buffalo out. So I'm surprised by that. Florida State is playing great right now. Gonzaga's playing great. Carolina has had a couple of shaky first halves, but have ran away in the second halves of their games. And more importantly for Carolina, Nasir Little has come to play and looks like a lottery pick the way he's playing over the course of these first two games. I've said it for the entire season that Nasir Little is the X factor for North Carolina. If Nasir Little can play near at this level, North Carolina becomes a different basketball team, a team that can win a national championship without question. Again, I'm not surprised that Duke struggled. I didn't expect them to come this close to losing, but people have to remember about Duke. This is a flawed basketball team. Zion Williamson and those freshmen cover a lot of holes, in particular Zion Williamson. That team is not a great shooting team. Their bench is limited. You can listen. It all it takes is one night for a team to go out there and shoot, knock down 12 threes, and for Duke to go, say, 3 for 15 from 3-point range, and they could be out the tournament. So that this is not a vintage powerhouse Duke team. It's a Duke team that has the most talent as far as lottery picks and what have you, but they are a flawed basketball team. That's all there is to it. They're a team that, you know, that has by far and away the best player in college basketball. And I don't want any more of the Zion, RJ Barrett comparisons. I can't take anything seriously as said by somebody that's from Toronto or from Canada. in regards to the opinion of those two players. Their opinion just makes no sense when it comes to judging those two players and comparing those two players. There is absolutely zero comparison between Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett. Zion Williamson has saved Duke over the last two of the last three games. He saved them against Carolina. He saved them against Carolina in the ACC semifinal, and he saved them yesterday evening against UCF. And again, thing that you're impressed with was with Williamson. Again, we people look at his offensive repertoire, his jumping ability, the athleticism. But again, there are moments when he looks like he's struggling, he does not lose patience. He lets the game come to him, and he explodes. He has periods of explosion to where he'll run off 8 to 10 points, and before you know it, he has 20 or 25 points. So he is a poised player who, again, looks like the smartest player on the court many times. And again, he made another spectacular pass to Trey Jones once again off the bounce that led to a layup. Made a similar pass in the Florida State game in the ACC championship. So again, this guy is a generational player. I mean, that's all to it. He could be the difference in the tournament. He could be why he's going. If Duke wins the championship, it's going to be because of Zion Williamson. It looks like he's going to have to carry them there. If you're a Duke fan, you have to be a little concerned that if he has a not so much a mediocre game, because I don't see that happen. I don't see him having a mediocre game. But if he has a, you know, instead of 30, if he has, you know, 20 and 8. What does Duke look like in that type of game? Duke is going to have enough. They're going to have at least, if they make it to the championship game, they're going to have at least two more tough games. I mean, I can see the Michigan State game is going to be a war. I think it's going to be them against Michigan State. And whoever they certainly won those two Final Four games is going to be a war. So they're going to, if they do win this championship, it will be well earned without question. So, again, it should be a great Sweet 16. You have nine teams out of two conferences in terms of the ACC and SEC. I give Virginia Tech also a lot of credit. They got off to a slow start against Liberty, came back, had a big second half. So they will play Duke for the. They'll play Duke again. Now they beat Duke at home, but again, that was without Zion Williamson, and that they were in Virginia Tech was without their point guard as well. So we'll see what happens in that matchup. With that matchup on come Friday. I think that game is on Friday. But again, if you're a fan of the NCAA tournament, you might be disappointed about the lack of upsets, but it should be a big time Sweet 16 coming up. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Again, this podcast is sponsored by ACM, All Calculated Measures, Clothing. Shout out to Adrian McDonald. Confidence, discipline, consistency. That is the mantra of All Calculated Measures. You can see the shirt here. Right here, All Calculated Measures. And there's certainly more to come. More to come over the course of our podcast. We are definitely happy and to have this collaboration with this black owned business in terms of t-shirts, sweatshirts, and what have you. And look forward to speaking with Adrian McDonald about the business and what have you. As far as the NBA goes, the Celtics against Sputtering. And again, if you're the Celtics, you probably want to sit Al Horford for the rest of the season and get him ready for the playoffs. He's not healthy right now. Kyrie complaining after a game. What's new with that? Be surprised at this point I'd be shocked if he resigns with Boston next season. And you have a team now that looks like a team that, you know, it's going to be one of these underachieving teams with a lot of talent whose chemistry is just shot. The Celtics, I don't believe in the Celtics having this on and off switch. I think the Celtics will struggle to get out the first round regardless of who they play. Right now, it's looking like it's going to be Celtics-Pacers. More than likely, they'll beat the Pacers. I don't think the Pacers have enough, despite how well the Pacers have played in the absence of one Victor Oladipo. I don't think the Pacers have enough to take out the Celtics in a 7-game series. I think, you know, Kyrie Irving will be the difference in that series. But I don't see the Celtics making a long run in the playoffs. I don't see the Celtics having this on and off switch to where they can just flip it and all of a sudden they're going to start playing great. I just don't see it. This team doesn't have championship pedigree to begin with outside of Kyrie or outside of Kyrie Irving. They don't have a lot of guys who have had that kind of experience. I know they made the conference finals last year, but that, again, that was without Kyrie Irving. You can tell something is a missed in that locker room. You can tell, you know, you can tell they just do not enjoy playing with Kyrie Irving. I can't say they don't enjoy playing with each other. They don't enjoy playing with Kyrie Irving. He, you know, despite how well he's played, the energy that he gives off to that team, it sucks, has sucked the life out of that team. And to me, they don't have strong enough leadership to offset the negative energy that Kyrie Irving gives off and has given off constantly throughout the course of this season. So I don't expect the Celtics to make a big run. Even, you know, when they get Horford back, again, I would rest Horford for the foreseeable future, up until the playoffs start. You don't gain anything. I don't think it's a big deal to have a home court advantage against Indiana. I think they can win a game 7 in Indiana if it gets to a game 7. As far as the Lakers go, of course, they were eliminated in the playoffs. They were eliminated Friday against the Nets, ironically, against one D'Angelo Russell, who has been one of the just revelations and some big and surprises of the 2018-2019 NBA season. Of course, he was an All-Star. He's an ex-Laker. Lakers trade, you know, got rid of him. And again, when Russell was traded, you didn't see me at all complaining about. I wasn't one of these people who was second guessing that move whatsoever. I thought, you know, at the time, I knew that they were going to draft. They were going to draft Lonzo Ball. Russell was immature at the time. I had no problem with it. Sometimes guys change places and become different players. Different players grow up eventually. So I'm not going to sit there and second guess the Lakers in terms of making that move. But the Lakers look bad all around with in terms of what's transpired with LeBron, Rob Pelinka, Magic Johnson, D'Angelo Russell becoming an all-star somewhere else. The Anthony Davis situation, it has been a disaster with the Lakers ever since LeBron pulled his groin muscle on Christmas Day and they had that 27-point victory against Golden State. It seems like that was 5 years ago. You look at the LeBron-Laker dynamic in terms of the relationship. Basically, the Lakers have become Cleveland West. The difference is LeBron's no longer the best player in the world. The difference is there's no Kevin Love or Kyrie Irving playing for this Laker team. The difference is the Western Conference is much stronger from top to bottom than the Eastern Conference was, say, last year and over the course of the Cleveland years with LeBron the second time around. So when you add all that up, and when you have a front office that really doesn't have a pure basketball person, you have a team that's looking on the outside in, a team that, you know, outside in of the playoffs, and a team with a uncertain future, to say the least, in terms of the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, I understand that they got some great news in regards to Brandon Ingram. They got the best news as far as his recovery being 3 to 4 months. I still don't think his trade value is going to be that high. Nowhere near what it was before this injury, but it seems like that this clock will not be like Chris, you know, unlike Chris Bosh's, will not be career threatening. So they got some good news from that standpoint. But right now, that franchise is a disaster right now, despite the cap space, despite the brand, despite all the things that the Lakers thought they had going for them. What they don't have is they don't have a basketball person. And if you look at all the successful franchises in the NBA right now, whether it's Bob Myers, whether it's Daryl Morey from Houston, R.C. Buford with San Antonio, all the top NBA places have basketball people. Even the Nets people now know what they're doing. We've seen the moves that Elton Brand has made with the Sixers in his first year. So they have basketball people. The Lakers have guy, you know, they have a ex-agent and a ex-icon who, in Magic Johnson, who, you know, anybody could sign Anthony Davis, okay, or try to trade for Anthony Davis. Anybody could try to sign LeBron James. The moves, you know, it's about finding that guy in the, you know, it's about scouting the guy on a Tuesday night playing, you know, in the WAC conference or the Big Sky. And right now the Lakers just don't have that personnel personnel in their front office. And it's reared its ugly head over the course of this season. And it has caused some great uncertainty in terms of the future of that franchise. So a couple positive things you can look forward to if you're a Laker fan for the rest of the season is the fact that LeBron is playing these games out. He has played well for the most part in the last couple games. I know he had a terrible shooting quarter against the Knicks, but he has, you know, looks like he's going to finish the season playing the majority of the games instead of taking the rest of the season off. And the fact that Brandon Ingram seems like Brandon Ingram will not have a career-threatening injury. So those are two positives, if you want to look at those as positives for Los Angeles Lakers. But right now, that franchise is in a lot of trouble, to say the least, because I just don't frankly see them getting Anthony Davis. And if they don't get Anthony Davis, then what direction are they going in? Are they going to go Kemba Walker? Are they going to go Jimmy Butler? They're not going to get Kawhi. They're not getting Durant. You're not getting Klay Thompson. More than likely, you're not getting Kyrie Irving. So they're going to have a lot of question marks going to the offseason. And again, they look bad all around. When you talk about what's happening with D'Angelo Russell, even the Clippers. I mean, look at the Clippers. The Clippers weren't even trying to make the playoffs this year. They trade away Tobias Harris. Right now, the Clippers are 44-30. Clippers are fighting for home court advantage. Mm-hmm. Think about that for a second. Doc Rivers, you could make a strong case for him being coach of the year. He's right there with Budenholzer, and Nate McMillan, and a couple other names that you can throw into that mix. But you know, the Lakers looked horrible, like all around. Whether it's D'Angelo Russell, whether it's the Clippers, to a lesser extent with Julius, how well Julius Randle has played. So they have a lot of question marks coming into the offseason, and they don't have a lot of time to get it fixed. This will be one of the biggest offseasons in that franchise in recent memory for that franchise. As far as the Warriors go, I'm not getting wrapped up into them losing by 35 to Dallas. I'm frankly tired of these new Warriors, to be honest with you. I'm tired of hearing about the complaints. I'm tired of hearing Steve Kerr complaining. I'm tired of hearing, you know, Draymond Green and Kevin Durant nonsense. I frankly want the old Warriors back. The old Warriors, led by Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, and to a lesser extent, Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala, were much better for NBA lives. I mean, they were just much better off. I mean, not from a talent standpoint, but from a standpoint of all this nonsense about, you know, Steve Kerr, you know, talking about how hard it is to win and to go back to back, and the league's catching up. Having Kevin Durant only take six shots in the game. Now again, in the game that they won, and again he had 11 assists, but it's just always something going on with the Warriors now. Outside of basketball, and forecasting what their future is going to look like. I like the old Warriors. I really do. I like the Steph Curry, Klay Thompson-led Warriors, who were deep coming off the bench with, who were going three or four deep off the bench. That Warrior team was much easier to root for. That Warrior team was much, didn't have all this extra stuff minus outside Draymond Green's nonsense that we were talking about. We're talking about Steve Kerr complaining. We're talking about Kevin Durant's basketball happiness. We're not talking enough about Steph Curry having an MVP caliber season. We're not talking enough about Klay Thompson, who is having an All-NBA caliber season. And again, I don't get caught up when the Warriors lose a game like they lost against Dallas. I really don't. The Warriors, they're built for the postseason. They don't care about the regular season. They have no interest in the regular season. None. So I don't get caught up in what the Warriors do over the course of the regular season. To me, it means absolutely nothing. If they are healthy going into the playoffs, they are the team to beat without question. They are the not odds-on favorite. They are the prohibited favorite to win a third, to win another championship, a third straight, fourth in 5 years. Again, I don't want to hear from Steve Kerr about anything in regards to how hard it is and this, that, and third, and the league catching up. And again, the Warrior soap opera has worn thin. It really has. It's worn thin. A lot of people want the Warriors to break up because they want competitive, want there to be more of a competitive balance. I almost want them to break up so that I just don't have to hear about their complaining game in and game out, or after every loss, there to be some, there'd be some point finger pointing or what's wrong, or hearing about what's wrong with the Warriors night in and night out, especially after losses. I don't want to hear. I'm tired of hearing about that. So, again, they're still the team to beat. Whether they get home court advantage or not, to me, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, them, whether they have it or Denver has it, it matters to Denver. It does not matter to Golden State, to me, whether or not they have home court advantage. Denver needs it. Golden State does not. Of course, we're just a couple days away from the baseball season really starting. Baseball. For a sport that to me is probably pound for pound the highest. Again, I know a lot of people don't have interest because of so many games and because of so many teams. You're not watching average baseball. You're not watching two bad teams play baseball in comparison to watching two bad football teams or two bad basketball teams. But still, at the most dramatic of all the four sports when it's played at the highest level. But as far as marketing, as far as doing things in terms of the best interest of the sports from a marketing standpoint, baseball does some of the dumbest stuff that you can imagine. To start the season last week, to me, absolutely made zero sense. There were people who didn't even know that the season was starting. Now, I know they had the Japan thing kind of tied in with Ichiro's retirement. But even that wasn't worth starting the season that early. And to me, it made zero sense. So I think baseball, you just got to be smarter. I mean, I would start the season, and I thought this was perfect, starting the season on a Monday, coinciding with the ending of the college basketball season. I thought that was a perfect segue of closing out one sport and opening another. Then they try to go to, starting the season on Sunday night and opening day on Monday. Now they want to start the season a week before. I just don't know what baseball just does not have a clue how to market this sport. And there's a reason why you can have a player who just signed for $430 million who could walk through a grocery store and not even be recognized in terms of Mike Trout. Which leads me to the Mike Trout contract, which, again, great for Mike Trout. He's been the best player in baseball for the last 5 years. For the last 5 to 6 years, he's going to be a top three MVP candidate for the foreseeable for at least another 6 to 8 years minimum, if not longer. But 12 years, $430 million with no trade clause, no opt-outs. To me, if you're the Angels, you made the playoffs in his 7 years one time. The Angels, I don't see any pitching that the Angels have. There's no way I'm investing that much into one player. This is completely different from the Phillies contract with Bryce Harper. $25 million versus $35 million is a big difference. You can get, you know, with that $10 million extra left over, you can get a quality player. You can get a couple quality players. You can get somebody in a bullpen as well as a utility player for $10 million. So I get the Phillies, you know, I don't blame the Phillies at all with the Trout, with the Harper contract, stretching it out and having his annual salary be $25 million versus Trout's contract and his annual salary be basically $35 to $36 million. It's a major difference. It was smart business by Philadelphia. Again, the Angels, I think the Angels panicked when they heard Bryce Harper talk about, you know, basically recruiting Trout for 2020. I definitely think I know this thing might have been in the works, but I definitely think that was somewhat of a factor in Mike Trout in the Angels signing Mike Trout back fast, signing Mike Trout to this record extension. Again, these contracts have not worked out well over the course of baseball history in recent memory when you give one player that much money, and especially a franchise that needs pitching in the worst way. I mean, the Angels pitching staff right now is a disaster. I mean, outside of Ohtani, that pitcher, you don't trust any of their pitches right now. So, again, great for Mike Trout. He is the best player in baseball, but I don't see how you can win consistently with having one guy making $35, $36 million a year in sport baseball. So, you know, that contract will age much better. It will age better than the Albert Pujols contract because Trout signed it at a younger age than when Pujols got his money. But it will not, to me, equate to wins when it comes to wins on the field. When it comes to that contract, considering the lack of pitching that the Angels have, I got a chance to see Us over the course of the weekend. Strongly recommend it. I'm not going to give too much away. It's just a lot of stuff that certainly you have to pay attention to. Now, unfortunately, if you go at night. And this is why I've been, you know, on recently the afternoon to morning movie, because if you go at night, it was so much stuff. I know it's a lot of stuff that I missed because of some of the noise. First of all, the movie is not a horror movie. It's a psychological suspense mystery thriller. Okay, nothing was scary about it at all in terms of as a horror movie. You're not talking about talking Friday the 13th, Halloween. Of that, you're not talking about a movie of that ilk. Jordan Peele, again, is, you want to say, called him the Alfred Hitchcock of his time, of this era. He's certainly approaching that. Any movie that makes you do research, whether it's Hands Across America, Jeremiah 11:11, you know, that is a movie that, you know, those types of movies that, will age well, and this movie will be a classic. You already saw what it's done. The box office grossing $70 million, blowing away Get Out, and that's another thing. It is nothing like Get Out. It is absolutely nothing like Get Out. from the standpoint of not one time, but I think, you know, when I was watching this movie, did I think about Get Out at all. So again, I'm not going to give away too much. It is a movie that is well worth, without question, that you, to me is an absolute must see. There are a lot of things that, you know, that this movie, I believe you have to see it twice. I'm probably going to go see it again, but I think this is the type of movie that you have to see twice. Because there's so much stuff. There were so many layers to it. There were so many nuggets and jewels that just, that could have been easily missed if, you know, if you were amongst the crowd that was yelling, you know, run every other scene or, I mean, something like, again, the movie was not scary at all. But, again, I enjoyed the movie a lot. I think Jordan Peele, Zone is obviously a superstar director, and you're going to see him, and he's reached that rarefied air of, if you see a movie or hear about a movie that's directed by him, it's become a must see. He's on that level as a director without question. So I strongly recommend it. I was not going to go see it a couple weeks back, but I said, you know, let me check this out. Let me see, you know, if he can follow up, Get Out, with another hit. And he certainly was there. That certainly was the case. Real Deal Podcast, 34 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour. Again, of course, we are sponsored by ACM, all calculated measures. Shout out to Adrian McDonough for providing the clothing. Got a couple retirements in the world of sports with Ichiro and Rob Gronkowski, two guys that will be Hall of Fame, that will be without question Hall of Famers. Ichiro was 45 years old, so it was only a matter of time. One of the great contact hitters of all time, a guy who came to the major league at the age of 27 and instantly made an impact, winning MVP as a rookie, and amazingly had over 3,000 hits, played 19 years, first of all. You know, retiring, was able to play 19 years despite coming in late at the age of 27, and had 10 years over 200 hits, was an all-around great player. Only thing Ichiro did not do was hit with power, but he did, as far as, you know, 10-time gold gloves, had an above-average arm. Again, one of the great contact hitters of this generation, this or any generation, always put the ball in play, was a spectacular when he was at the top of when he was at his best, was a legit top five, top 10 player in all of baseball. Again, this is a guy who came into the major league and was immediately rookie of the year and immediately MVP his first full season back in 2001 on that CL team that won like 114 games in the regular season, and, you know, ended up losing to the Yankees in the ALCS. But that, he was a spectacular player and was I think, without question, a Hall of Famer, borderline all-time great. He's borderline. The only thing that kept him from being all-time great was the lack of power that he had, but he did everything else. Rob Gronkowski, of course, no surprise to me, retired from New England. I thought Gronkowski, at his best, at his pinnacle, was the greatest tight end of all time. Now, if you want to argue, you want to say I'd rather had the longevity of a Tony Gonzalez or Antonio Gates, so be it. Gronkowski played 9 years. Those guys played much longer. But Rob Gronkowski, at his best, at his pinnacle, was the greatest tight end of all time. There was nobody, because there was nothing he couldn't do. I mean, block, great hands. Ran routes like a wide receiver, and was completely just unstoppable. I mean, even if you covered him with a cornerback, a top cornerback, he was virtually unstoppable. I thought one of his great games came in a defeat a couple of years back in the AFC Championship against Denver when they lost that great Denver defense. He was the best player on the field. Outside of Von Miller, he probably was the best player on the field with the 8 catches, 144 yards, and a touchdown. In a game where yards were hard to come by, in a game where Tom Brady got his brains beat in. Gronkowski, to me, was just a man amongst boys. And again, I don't have any problem with somebody calling Tony Gonzalez all around the greatest tight end. As far as, like, you probably would take Tony Gonzalez's career in terms of numbers and longevity over Gronkowski, a combination of longevity with numbers. But as far as playoff, as far as all around everything, that whereas peak performance and playoff dominance, there was not a better tight end in the history of the NFL outside other than Rob Gronkowski. And that's another thing. He was money in the postseason. When he was healthy. And again, that's the only knock you could have against Gronkowski, that he was oft injured. He missed a lot of games, only had a couple seasons where he played up to full 16 games. But again, at his best, at his peak, he was the greatest tight end of all time. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I'm your Surreal Gerald Quinn. As always, this is the Real Deal Podcast with no apologies. Thanks for listening.